Excuse me. Excuse me. I was going to have us do it on three, but anyway. Hello there. It's Phil Parr and Don Patterson and Don Shaw here with the Blind Handyman Show. Tom Houston is on assignment today.
Yeah.
How are your headphones, Pat?
They're great.
Are they great?
Yeah. How's that microphone?
That microphone is just perfect. Couldn't be better. Anyway, I'm Phil Parr, and this is show number...
184, believe it or not.
184, my
man.
184. Don Shaw is here, obviously, and Don Patterson is here, and I'm Phil Parr, sitting in for Tom Houston.
That's right.
We've had...
miserable weather.
Yesterday, he called me yesterday and said that there was ice on his porch, and he's afraid he couldn't get back up the ramp. Well, the ice is gone, but it's just steady raining, cold 38. I talked to Jeff Kissinger this morning. He said, you wimpy Southern guys. Because yeah. He lives in, where does he live? In Nebraska or Kansas?
Trust me, we're not used to it. I went out to Emily's car, the Discovery, which was sitting out of the shelter, because we don't have a shelter that will fit under. And in the freezing, I couldn't hardly open the back door. The door was froze.
Wow.
I was out there having this struggle with the car.
I thought you parked her under the...
Well, we didn't. That's another part of the story I'll tell you about. But we will. That's where it's going. One end is dedicated to that. But we hadn't as of yet.
Haven't done that as of yet. But you're going to.
Yeah. Now I got the concrete slab poured.
All right.
The problem was, do we have time for this story?
We do. We got all the time.
Well, we had during the midst of all of this bad weather, which you've seen about it, we had three beautiful days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Last week or last Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, or maybe Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, the day of the Tuesday that I didn't come.
Yeah.
And so I called my concrete guy that was going to pour it. I called him Sunday. Albert, why don't you come and look this over and see what you think? We got three good days. Are you busy when you went on? So, man, 15 minutes later, there's Albert. Well, we can build this for him tomorrow, and we can pour concrete Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever. Man, Albert, go for it. So, in the meantime, when they're building the form, the next day he's got his crew out there, and they're building the form. He says, I'm going to call that concrete company and send that salesman out here and see if they can get these trucks in here. Okay. Boy, the salesman comes out there. Yep. They go, this ground's good. Well, to make a long story short, they sent three trucks, and they had to pull all three of them out with a wrecker. They have a big, humongous wrecker. And so they tore my yard up for a good quarter of a mile.
I bet.
How many times will it make that you've put in grass over there?
That's unreal.
That company, Contractor Supply, owns this humongous wrecker, and I'm sure that's not the first time or the last time a concrete truck is going to get stuck. So anyway, we got that taken care of, but then that's why we couldn't get Emily's car. She was four-wheel drive, and it's kind of made for off-roading, but we didn't, we said with the road all screwed up, we'll just get it in there. When it dries out, after our next big rain that's coming this weekend, it's going to do this all this coming weekend, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Then I'm going to take my tractor and probably get a couple loads of dirt and rake it down, and it'll be back to normal, but at least I got that finished and most of my sheetrocking done in those three days.
We are in for this until sometime in April. Probably.
I believe this is the wettest that I've since I've lived in Lufkin, going into springtime.
Tell you another year that was this wet. It was the year we built this building, which was 1999. My God. I was up every morning. I'd just get up and listen to weather, and, if it was going to rain, it wasn't any point in getting up.
More of the same.
Going back to bed, to hell with it. But it's, you got your slab poured for the, what we call the dog pen.
That's the dog pen. The ceiling's up there. It's wired.
Wow.
I have the dog pen, the actual metal 10x10 one pen. I'm going to put another one up there. That's already there.
Yeah.
I did notice with it being open on all sides, during this rain, I had some water. As cold as it's been, and had you been a dog and you were out there, you would have gotten wet, and that sort of defeats my purpose.
Not good.
So now I'm going to have to figure out a way to fight this rain off, or I may have to enclose in that area two sides.
Yeah.
Two sides of the... you know.
But this is just a temporary place for them to go.
Yeah, no, it's just, well, it, they, yeah, they're not going to go from being house dogs
to
dogs. But like the problem that I have, like on days like today, and you get 3 days running when it's wet and nasty outside, when you let them go out to kind of take care of their business, they get just as nasty as they can, and then want to come back and jump on the couch.
Yeah.
And my theory is, on these kind of days, you escort them under guard to the kennel, put them in there, and then when you want them to come out, you walk them down the sidewalk. I poured a sidewalk, so they'll be nice,
clean
and dry.
Sidewalk.
And, yeah.
Man, it'll be with your four dogs. It'll be just constant moving. You know, there'll be you'll be taking them out and bringing them in. It'll take all day.
Well, no, they'll get to stay when they get there. They'll get to stay for a while. You know.
Man, my wonderful friend Frankie. 3 o'clock this morning, Sarah woke us up wanting out, so she went out and started barking so Frankie'd come out. Well, Frankie went out, and then I got up to let them both back in and didn't fold the bed covers back, and Frankie immediately came in and got in my place.
Right.
And so my bed was just wet.
Wet, right.
You know, what do you do?
Man.
Yeah, if you're a dog fancier, give up on the good housekeeping seal.
Because it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, it was, it's been, with the way it is, muddy and wet, and, you know, I just keep a towel there hanging on the dining room chair and dry them off. But I made a mistake. I let them stay in yesterday, and, of course, Sarah was up all night.
Right, you know.
So they're out today. Anyway, we're short of Tom, but we have Don Patterson's going to read. There's some...
Sitting in for Tom Houston.
This is Don Patterson. Yes, friends.
All right, it says, my problem, this is from Victor Govea.
Victor Govea.
Right, and he said, my problem is the shower door. So these are the kind that hang off a rail at the top of of the bathtub enclosure and use a rail at the bottom to guide the doors.
Yeah.
The bottom portions of the doors do not have wheels.
No, they don't.
Only the top of the doors where they hang off a lip that curves under the wheels.
Uh-huh.
And then he goes into to say that lately these doors are not doing well. They're kind of herky-jerky. He didn't use those, my words. Yeah. But anyway,
the wheels are out of round or something.
And he says, he said that if he didn't know any better, he would swear that the wheels have gotten out of round.
Yeah.
They're kind of bumpy up and down. And that's what he says right here. If I didn't know any better, I'd swear that the wheels had gotten deformed or something and were no longer round. First question is, can I grease these little monkeys?
Well, you don't need to grease them. In this case, WD-40 will work.
Okay, but he says the next question is, what should I use to grease these monkeys? Should I use WD-40 silicone spray or a powder grease I've heard mentioned on the show? And then he says establish his worries. He says, I remember Phil's horror story about using WD-40 on his patio.
Yeah, really.
That's a different thing.
And how they got to... So anyway, the basic thing of his is how... What can Victor do? What can... To solve his problem?
I'd take it off, clean the lip that they hang on, make sure that the wheels are turning, and just put a little... Because the reason the patio door deal doesn't work, and I knew this before we did it, my son and I just thought, well, it does. Well, that door, you saw it the other day.
Yeah, really difficult.
I mean,
got a response.
It's hard to close. Anyway, just WD-40 in this, because it's not going to be... In the patio door, there's going to be dirt. Right. Here, there's not going to be dirt, and that WD-40 attracts dirt. Okay. All right, what is the response?
Well, the response is, and it kind of... it says, Happy New Year, Victor. I have doors similar to those you've described. I've taken them down and discovered that the edges of the wheels had accumulated that hardened goop that accumulates in showers.
Mm-hmm.
I cleaned them up with detergent and a scrubby sponge. Make sure you make note of which mounting hole they come from, or your doors will not be level. So that was just a matter of taking the doors down.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something I've never done. I guess you would lift them up. The top rollers must be spring-loaded, and you push it up to clear that bottom rail.
No, they're not spring-loaded that I know of, but it actually hangs. Your shower door hangs on that rail, and when you lift it up, you just clear that lip, and kaboom, you got it in your hand.
Okay, because, and then... I think a good cleaning, too, and...
Yeah. and WD-40.
Or just, without taking them down, you might get, rather than oil them, I might consider some real heavy-duty cleaner, i.e. 409 industrial strength, and squirt up in there and see if it'll kind of do its magic, and then maybe get a sprayer with just clean water to rinse it.
I did not take them down. I simply pushed it to one end, squirted stuff in the lip, pushed it to the other end, squirted stuff in the lip, and moved it back and forth, and it works fine. I didn't take
for
it
the
down.
Best.
I didn't take it down this time.
Yeah,
I just WD-40'd it.
But your patio door is still not working.
Well, my patio door works, but it takes three or four of you to open it. It's to get a group, get a pair of come-alongs.
Yeah, really.
You can open it.
But, here's another one.
And
I'll tell you right now, this is the kind of... if you have a problem, I'll tell you a weird problem that just same topic, but not same problem.
All right.
Anyway, it says when I turn my washing machine on, the circuit box makes a strange noise. My lights flicker. My lights flicker. I'm doing my punctuation wrong.
Right.
Should I be concerned?
Yes.
Sarah Durr. And we have a response, but I'd like to know how close the circuit box is to the washer, unless it's right in that same room. If it's just a humming, I have no idea why that would happen. So
when you turn on the air conditioner in the shop in there, when you kick the air conditioner on, it goes, makes that box rattle a little bit, but I don't think the lights dim. How would I know, right?
Right.
But if her lights dim, then you don't have heavy enough wire going to your plug. You think so?
Yeah, I think that could be the problem, all right.
But, I mean, I'm wondering if this is just a new place she's moved to, an existing problem.
I don't know.
Has her washing machine wire gotten frayed somehow or damaged? It looks like if this would have been going to do it.
It'd do it all the time.
But we do have a response.
All right.
And it says the breakers here are magnetic, and when our old washer started the spin cycle, one of the breakers would buzz for a few seconds, but it never tripped it. Doesn't do that with the new washer. And that's from Max.
From Max Robertson.
So I guess he's saying go buy a new washer.
But if you hold the door on the box, the electric box in the shop, and turn the air conditioner on, it doesn't buzz.
Yeah.
So it's just shaking. It's just
a vibration.
And that's what she's got is just a little B flat 60 cycle vibration for just a second. Sound like Pete Peacock.
Yeah.
But the fact that the lights dim would bother me. I wouldn't like that.
But I think that's just a period. A lot of times, if you have something, I didn't think a dryer would have taken that much amperage to start it. But, you know, a dryer, if you turn on, probably seemed like I might have known because it's fluorescent, but you might notice a little dimness in the light in the utility room just for that.
During the startup
startup time.
Yeah,
when the start capacitors kick in.
Just a curious thing, though. I those kind of problems that are difficult for me to handle. You always just like you play detective and you're not sure which way to really go. We had an interesting thing at our house here. I guess maybe as of a month or so ago, Emily would say. The dryer is just not drying good. And when we're talking about an appliance that's less than 3 years old, what we bought it when we bought the house.
Okay.
And so I said, well, in obvious, you know, she cleans the filter, and she does that every time she goes. Well, as it turns out, upon further investigation, the way my utility room is they have a 3-inch PVC pipe, similar like to a drain stack, that runs in the slab, down under the slab and out. It curves back up to get outside above the ground.
And that's your vent.
And that is my vent. Whose vent, with all the humidity, had water in it? I just walked out around the drain, and you could hear the dryer on, and it was going, grow, 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 grow.
Oh, well, that'll keep it from working.
It'll keep it from drying. I took my shop vac and put it down right in that end. Apparently, it slants, and that was my lucky break. And I turned the vac on, and I had about 3 gallons of water, and nothing flat, it's empty, and quit gurgling, and the dryer's performing. So in 3 years, we had accumulated that much moisture, so that's not anything I'm going to worry about. But I know how to solve it.
Yeah. Well, is it facing straight? How'd it get water in it?
Well, it's because the humidity from the dryer. In other words, the pipe goes down and in the slab, and so just it's long. It's 20-something feet from the dryer to the exit point on that pipe.
But the vent doesn't face up. It faces...
No, it faces down. In fact, I put a little grid on it to keep a creepy crawler from getting up in there.
Yeah.
And so I took that out and cleaned that. But still, it had just accumulated water from... And so, but the little shop vac, the hose curled around down in there, and man, I mean, and we were,
right,
we're humming again.
Yeah, because that would keep your dryer from properly drying, and it would cost money because your dryer would run all the time, you know?
That is correct.
So, what else? Is that it?
That is it on the email.
That's it for email. Well, I guess we'll take a break and... How was that, cool or what? I just potted it up and they started playing
perfecto.
A song.
Perfecto.
Probably pretty amazing, isn't it? Well, we're just sort of here watching it rain, having a cold one, and hoping for the best. And we'll do the same thing. Our guest is...
The This Old House guy this week.
Our old Charles.
From
I'm going to get it right, Unadilla.
New York.
Unadilla, New York. We've had him on several times.
Oh,
he's always a good guest. So we'll do him and be back in just a minute. Hang on. Interlude there to introduce the next session of a segment of the Blind Handyman Show. And here's a Charles Reichardt. How are you, sir?
Very good. How's everybody? How's all the people in the handyman world?
Cold.
Well, we're cold and it's raining on us, man. It's not good.
Yeah.
Weather is not, of course, compared to what it is up there. What's the temperature in Unadilla, New York, sir?
Well, today, in fact, right now, as of about 10 minutes ago, it was 31 degrees. Our normal high temperature this time of year is 28 degrees, and it's only been the last couple of days that we've actually been anywhere near normal here. I don't know if I'm normal anyway, but I'm talking about the weather.
Yeah. I got you. We got you.
It's been very, very mild.
Yeah.
In fact, the most of the time in November, December, and much of January, it's been in the 30s, 40s, and even 50s.
Wow!
So we've finally gotten to winter, and it's been here now for a few days, and they promise that it's going to continue for a little while. So my pocketbook has liked the idea, though, because we've spent a lot less on fuel oil
so far
this season than we normally would have.
Yeah, Garrison Keeler says the same thing about Minnesota, that it's just been a very mild winter, that they finally got some snow up there. You know, and he's in in St. Paul, Minnesota, and usually it starts snowing in October and snows till April.
Well, we generally get quite a bit of snow here, too. And, up till right now, we have a total of 5 inches of snow for the whole season, and that...
Man,
that's nothing. I mean, we'll get that overnight just as a flurry sometimes.
I know. Yeah. Now, I know we've asked you this before. What part of the state of New York? You in northern New York?
In central New York. They call it the Southern Tier. It's, let's see, it's about 50 miles northeast of Binghamton.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a little, you know, Buffalo is still quite a bit out west, and so is... Rochester and that, and we get some lake effect snow at times, but generally not. We don't get the snows that Buffalo and Rochester do. We're not quite that, you know, far west. We're in the western foothills of the Catskills, I guess you'd call it.
The foothills of the Catskills. Sounds picturesque and really nice and cold.
Well, actually, it is very picturesque.
And mighty cold.
And the weather has a lot to do with this area here, and it has a lot to do with what I want to talk about today, in fact, and here I go making a nice, neat segue into...
That's good.
Into what I...
We need help. We need all the help we can get, Charles. We'll let you segue. Say hi to Don Patterson. He's here.
Hi there, Charles.
How you doing, guys?
I'm doing great.
Don and everybody, it's really good to...
One quick question before you segue.
Yeah, sure.
I want to talk about the city with the subway. As the crow flies, to help us out, how far are you from New York City?
From New York City, as the crow flies, probably, I don't know, 200 miles.
Oh, that's far enough. I mean, that's great.
175.
Okay.
Yeah, we're far enough away from the city to be, you know, not really feeling its adverse effects that much.
Yeah, not going to be annexed anytime soon.
I've got a friend he lived in Texas, a good one named Ken Heron, who's doing mornings at a station in Syracuse, New York. And
Syracuse is about not quite a 2-hour ride from here.
Well, he is not pleased with the weather in Syracuse, New York.
They get a good deal more snow there than
being from Texas. He's not happy with Syracuse weather. All right, we'll let you continue with your segue now, Charles.
Well, the reason I call it a segue is because it truly is. Before, when I've been on, we've talked about my old house.
Yeah.
And just to fill in, I'll just give a brief summary for those who haven't heard about it.
All right.
My wife and I bought an old house in Unadilla, New York, about 5 years ago. And the house was built originally in 1804, and it's been added on to a couple of times over the centuries, literally.
Yeah.
But it's a very old place. It's the oldest standing residence in the village that we live in, and we've been very slowly kind of restoring it. And there's always a myriad of projects going on here. We've worked on one room or another, and we've worked on some electrical work and a little bit of plumbing, and, you know, there's always something going on. Well, the weather played a very important part of what's been happening in this house this past year, in that during the springtime, the latter part of June, the Susquehanna River flooded. It went over its banks, and that really caused some problems here.
Whoa.
Now, I live right across the street from the Susquehanna. If you walk out my front door and walk across the street, in fact, if you just walk out the front door, you can see the river.
Wow. Really?
So we live very close to it, although it's across the across Route 7 here, and Route 7 is it's a secondary road, basically. When you compare it to the interstate, but it's heavily traveled, but it's not a real big highway or anything. And if you walk across there, there's a little park right across from our house, which has a commemorative bench in it of one of the people who used to live in the house. So this place is pretty historic. But in any event, we have been getting a lot of rain in June, and it rained and it rained and it rained for days and weeks and seemed like forever. And it was, you know, it rained for a day, and it stopped for a few hours, and it rained a little bit more, and it stopped. It just kept on going like that for days on end. And the river got higher and higher, and it really looked like there might be a problem.
Yeah.
And I remember on a Tuesday night, my wife and I went across the street, and she said, "Oh, the river's got quite a bit yet to go before it's going to go over its banks. So we should really be, you know, we should be okay. It's not going to rain that much more."
Yeah.
Well, the next morning, we were up and we were in our what we call home office. We were doing some computer work and we had the local FM station on because, of course, we wanted to monitor the weather and see what was going on. And the next thing we hear is an evacuation order.
Man.
They said that the river was going to go over its banks and that they wanted everybody out. So with that, we began to move stuff from one floor to the next. You know, my wife, make sure you get those computers upstairs. And
well, I don't blame her.
Carrying hard drives. And we have an external drive and, you know, different things, pictures and important papers and everything we could to get on the second floor.
Yep.
And I did get my exercise that day, I must say.
I bet you did.
Yeah.
And during all that, we get a knock on the door, and it's the local fire department.
It's them.
And they came to give us the formal request for evacuation. In fact, it was a demand of evacuation. And they said that we had to get out, and they were going to mark the house as evacuated, and you know, there wasn't much to be said about it. So we got in our car with our two. We have two dogs. We have one who's a pet and one who's a service animal. My guide dog Wilson.
Uh-huh.
And we took the dogs and us. We got in the car with virtually nothing but what we were wearing, and we were going to head up to Lorene's mom's place, which is the next town down the road. But we couldn't get there. That road had already been closed off, and there was no other access point to get to her place. So we headed to the local high school here, which was going to be where we spent the next few days in the emergency shelter. So we did that, and we were in the shelter, and I think for two nights and one full day and two partial days. So I got to know very quickly what it was like to live in an emergency shelter, and it's really kind of interesting. I mean, we have had, compared to the people in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, you know, we've had nothing here, and I can only imagine what those people there. My heart goes out to them. You know what they've really felt out.
Well, did you end up with water in the house?
We ended up with water in. It came up to the floor joists in the basement.
Okay.
Another inch or two, and we would have had water in the first floor.
Wow.
When
Shelter, it's really kind of interesting. When we were at the shelter, we got some reports from the local firemen. They come up every once in a while and let us know what was going on down in town and how badly everything was getting flooded.
Yeah.
And we have, In our the windows that face the highway, we have decorative candles, electric candles that come on automatically when the when it gets dark.
Yeah.
They have photoelectric cells in them. And the fireman told us, the people who have the house with the candles in the windows, well, your power's still on, and that told us that our house was still standing.
Because
when we left, I think the most difficult thing of all of this was when we left our house to go to the shelter. The firemen told us in there, either they were overzealous or misinformed or whatever, but they told us that they might have to open up all the gates on the dam. And if they did that, the village would have virtually been wiped off the map. So when we left our house, we had no idea what or if we were going to come back.
If you'd be able to come back, yeah.
Yeah, we had no idea. And that was one of the strangest, saddest feelings I've ever had in my life.
Imagine.
To not know. But in any event, the fireman told us that our candles were still coming on at night in the windows, so we knew we had power, and that was definitely a good sign.
Yeah.
But when we got back here, we discovered that the water was almost ready to come into the first floor. My workshop was all flooded. The barn/carriage house that we have in the back of the place,
mm-hmm.
was flooded, about 3 feet of water in there, and oh, what a mess. We haven't even gotten to that place yet except for getting the lawn equipment back again, running again.
But your shop...
I threw out, I had stored in there all kinds of books and tapes and
you know,
adaptive equipment that I really didn't use on a regular basis. I had boxed up and so on, and I lost it all.
Wow.
I was just picking up boxes of stuff and throwing it in the back of our pickup truck.
What about your shop now? Did you have electric too? Like a...
Yeah, the shop had electric, and we didn't lose anything in the shop. It was really, really quite interesting. As high as the water had gotten in there, and it was as dirty as it had gotten, the only thing that really... the only thing that really got wet that was electric was my my skill saw, which I had on the too close to the floor.
Yeah.
But I dried it out, and I plugged it in, and it runs. I don't know if it's going to last.
I was going to say, if you dried it out, it'll probably run.
Yeah, it might decide to burn up.
I have a miter saw that I paid $70-something dollars for about 3 years ago, and it is set out in the rain all this time. It's still outside, and when we go back out there in the dry, I don't do anything, and it runs. So.
That's amazing.
The only thing is, eventually, it's gonna, the inside of that motor is going to rust.
Well, yeah, I hope to retire.
Oh, yeah, be finished.
Or you'll never retire.
I turn it on once in a while to cut something, and so far it's still... It still works, and we have a big upright freezer out there too.
Yeah.
And I got all the water out of the motor and really dried that up good, and that still works now too. So we didn't lose anything out there, thankfully, except I had several rolls of insulation on the floor that I was putting up on the walls, and you try to get soaking wet insulation, the rolls of it out of there. I mean,
I bet
generally is pretty lightweight until it gets wet. But it's weighing hundreds of pounds when it gets wet.
So how often do they think this might, they kind of give you predictions on how often this might happen. How long have you lived
there?
Well,
even though we live right across from the river, we are not considered to be living in a floodplain. In fact, it's a 500-year floodplain.
Now
we have 499 years to go before other weather.
Well, I was going to ask you that. Now, had you sustained any severe damage? I mean, you did enough, in my opinion. Is your homeowner's insurance, after the hurricanes around these parts, well, we've had, lawsuits and everything against these crappy insurance companies, Farmers in particular, and Allstate, some of them not wanting to honor their claim. So if you would have had a problem, it would have been rising water. Obviously, there was no wind. How would your insurance how will they deal with you?
Well, I have to say, Don, to the people who I know who have had homeowners flood insurance didn't make out very well.
Do you have to have a special policy? That's what they do to you in the floodplain.
We didn't have any flood insurance. Yeah. We didn't have to have it.
Yeah.
We got some help, and we got it from FEMA.
Well, great.
And the state had a program too, and we got help from there because we did sustain damage. We had over $1,000 worth of work. Had to be done to our brand new boiler and furnace. The water heater needed work, and a whole electrical panel had to be redone. Because once the firemen shut the water, once they shut the power off, so they could pump the basement out.
Right.
Yeah.
Is when all the damage occurred. I was absolutely amazed that when we came home, the sump pumps were still running.
Wow.
And the power was on, et cetera. But once they cut that power, is when all the damage. So we had to have all the breakers replaced. We had I had to replace one of the sump pumps. We had the furnace needed all the controls. The electronic controls blew out.
Yeah.
But by the very nature that you have sump pumps installed means that this problem occurs to some degree.
You get water in your basement every year, some water, don't you?
Yeah, we get some water, yeah.
Okay, so that, I mean...
We had sump pumps, that was the normal thing for them to come on.
And then, so at what point, I mean, you said they were coming by telling you your power was still on. At what point did they come and turn the electricity off?
They didn't turn it off until we were home. We came home, and the firemen came here about an hour and a half after we got in the house, to pump our basement.
I got you.
And it's at that point that they shut the power off.
Okay, but
we had heard reports that they were going to shut the whole village off at once, or then they were going to do it block by block. But they ended up doing it house by house.
Why did they shut the power off?
So they can pump the basement. If they tried to put their equipment down there to pump out, they would have gotten electrocuted.
Oh, well, that wouldn't be good.
Yeah, because the water was way past the height of the breaker panel. It was all the way up to just about ready to come in the first floor.
A dead fireman in your basement is never any fun.
Yeah, not
just
none.
But really, since after it reached that level, whether they turned the power off at that point or not, you'd have had to replace that.
Yeah, that was all shot anyway.
It was all done. But everything was still running when the power came back on.
Those pumps
worked.
In that. Yeah,
that's amazing.
So anyway,
we're still. We're still recuperating from that and repairing some things. It's just amazing. My wife was incredible because she had to we had to clean out the entire basement. Had to wipe it. We had to hose everything down with a bleach solution because the water was not only water, but it was mud and it was contaminated.
There was
sewage in it. There was fuel oil in it. And that's another thing. There were some people in town whose fuel tanks would disconnect if they weren't full, they would disconnect and float or spill over.
Yeah.
And then we had environmental trucks in the area pumping out people's basements that had oil in them, and ours didn't. Ours were full, thankfully, and they stayed in place. But. We're still going through a lot, but anyway, she had to wash everything down with the bleach solution, and our base we've cleaned our basement like it hadn't been cleaned in 200 years.
Yeah, flood's a big deal. There's no question about that.
Last time we talked with you, you were sort of toying with the idea that this house might be more than you could handle.
Well, Phil, I still really feel that way. And the main reason is because the house needs a paint job. I can certainly prep the house for painting. I can scrape it and I can caulk it and get things ready to be painted. But
to actually put a
brush in my hand and say I'm gonna paint this place. I mean,
it's not blind friendly.
It's not gonna happen. And. To hire somebody to do it, I think the cost would be prohibitive, because it's a big house. It's a 4,700 square foot.
Good Lord,
man!
Yeah, it's pretty big. It's like 17 rooms.
Wow.
So far we're hanging on by a thread here, and it is a dream that both my wife and I have had, and we're fulfilling it. But in a real practical sense, how long are we going to be able to do it?
Who knows?
Is another issue.
Yeah.
I must say though, I'm learning a lot. I'm having a lot of. One of the things I'm doing right now is that we have a steam heating system, and all of the insulation on the steam pipes that was not removed over the years had to be removed after the flood, or was taken off by the floodwaters. So. We virtually had all our oral piping underneath there with no insulation on it. So now I'm in the process of re-insulating that so that we can heat the house and not the basement. And that's quite a job. There's quite a bit of pipe down there. I've probably purchased and installed enough insulation now to do 400 feet of pipe. Because you have a main pipe feeding each of the radiators plus a return. And there's a main loop that runs all around the basement. It's taking a lot of time to do that. But I found this material that is like a bubble pack that's made out of aluminum, and it's 16 inches wide. And I'm cutting it to fit. Some pipes are 3.5-4 inches wide. Other pipes are 2 inches wide. And, you know, I'm fitting it to the pipe and duct taping it and, you know, taping the seam and so on and so forth.
Wait a minute. Don't they make insulation, pipe insulation that's open on one side that you just wrap around the pipe and then you...
Yeah, they do, Phil, but that is mainly used for water pipe.
It wouldn't work for this?
Well, it would work, except that it would be cost prohibitive.
Okay, this is cheaper.
It would take years for the payback to occur using that stuff.
Now, just let me ask you this about steam. I've often wondered, we had steam at the blind school. Those are just in parallel. They go from one radiator to the next, right, and then come and then circle back, or what? Or is each radiator individually? No, they'd have to be individually piped.
Here, gets its heat. There's two systems, two types of steam systems. That we have a single pipe system where each radiator gets its feed from a main loop that goes all the way around the basement, and then there's another loop that goes around that relieves pressure from one radiator to another. Then there's the second kind of system where you have one pipe going in each radiator, another pipe coming out. So it goes from one to the other.
That would be like series, really.
Yeah. Series.
And we have the first type here. We have the single pipe, which is the older of the two types of systems. So that's been my main project this winter, is to get all that insulated.
Yeah.
So then, in a sense, your heating oil that you buy is out in the tank, and it heats water that goes through the steam system, and that's how you heat your home?
Yes.
Are there any fans involved? I mean,
no, there's no forced air, no movement of air at all.
And does this work pretty good?
Yeah, it's a very comfortable heat. It's a very cozy feeling, a very comfortable heat. It's really quite efficient for what it is. It's just that the equipment itself is not... You know,
it's anywhere near modern standard. It's hard to maintain.
It does sound
it takes a lot of work to keep the system
up. When you first described it, I thought, Jesus, what an inefficient system. You know.
Well, just for grins, I mean, and we don't have that big a house, and we're on average billing, but I'm all electric, and we're talking 2,500 square feet. You said you're almost twice as big.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what we're on a budget plan with the local oil company.
Uh-huh.
And our budget payment is $450 a month for oil.
Well, see, my electric bill is $400, about $425 average.
Yep.
Winter. Now, what I was going to ask you though is that's your heating oil, and then that's my electric. How? I mean, you've got pumps involved pumping this water from a boil. I mean, you have a boiler to maintain.
Yeah. Boiler is all self-contained. It draws water. It has a tank, and it draws water. And it when it fires up, it heats it, and the steam comes up and goes to the individual radiators. So it's all kind of a self-contained unit. In fact, it's pretty small compared to the one that used to be there. Was very large. This thing is probably. I'd say the size of a washing machine. It's really quite efficient, quite small for what it does. And it's just got this big pipe coming out of the top of it into a manifold, and then there's all the piping comes off from that.
But you got the first thing, the fire has to fire up.
Yeah.
The oil has to build a fire, so you have to have the fire burner under the water.
Right.
It has to heat this huge tank of water. So it must take 6 hours for you to get going.
No, it's not that much water, actually, Phil. It's not as big a tank as you might think. It's quite a small quantity of water. I would say we get steam coming up out of the radiators. The furnace will probably run for 20 minutes to a half an hour, and then we have
the burner.
Steam coming up.
The burner will run for that long,
yeah.
And you got steam,
yeah.
And the steam just comes by itself, and then your thing returns it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
How much do you lose? Do you lose any?
There is some that's lost, because each of the radiators has a bleeder valve on it,
yeah,
and it'll allow some pressure out occasionally, or So there's a little bit that's lost into the air, but this furnace just, you know, takes on more when it needs
to. But with air that humid, you wouldn't have, because I'm having a terrible problem with static electricity.
Yeah, dry air.
Every time I get up out of my chair, I get shocked. I mean, just it's just a...
Yeah, we don't have that problem here.
Oh, man.
Let me ask you this. Out of 17 rooms in your house, you said, how many have radiators?
All of them, but we don't heat all of them.
Right.
I was going to say.
Yeah, no, we don't heat all of them. Most, in fact, the only room on the second floor that we heat is our bedroom. All the other radiators are turned off and the doors are closed.
But how do you fight then? See, down here, that would really cause some humidity, moisture, mildew problems down
here. Yeah, house isn't that tight.
Yeah, okay. If we did that down here, man, you'd have moldy sheetrock. So I have to kind of heat. See, I even have a little room upstairs that I keep it 68 just to keep that from, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the house isn't that tight.
Okay.
So there's always air moving in, moving out.
Yeah.
That's sad, isn't it? Well, yeah. Charles, I hate the flood happened and you had to leave your it must have been traumatic for you to leave.
It was traumatic.
It would have been.
It's an experience I hope I never have again. In fact, if it ever happens again, there may or may not be a for sale sign on the front door, but we're packing up. At least I am.
But there will be shortly after it happens, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming to Boston. Maybe we'll drift down and see you. We're coming
to
Boston.
We'd love to see you guys.
We're coming to Boston this fall.
Love to have you here, and, you know, I've often thought of, just coming out to Lufkin and seeing all of you. And,
well, come on. We're
doing a blind weekend or something.
Yeah.
It's just hard to get, get moving like that.
Well, if you fly into Houston, we'll run down and pick you up, you know? That's the best we can do.
Well, we just might surprise you one of these days.
Charles, it's always good to talk to you, sir, and tell Mama hello, and we'll visit with you.
We will do that, and next time, if you have me on the show again, we'll talk more about a project or two that we're working on. And but I just wanted to bring everybody up to date and and talk about our experience here.
You're our longest-running guest. You're our longest-running guest. We try to have you once or twice a year. Thank you, sir, and go outside and shovel off your sidewalks.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
See you later,
have a good
Charles.
One.
Take it easy.
Charles Reichardt from Unadilla, New York. We're always glad to have him on the show, and we'll come up here. We got a little vocal. We'll come up with something to talk about here in a minute. I got to go get a glass of wine. I'll be right back.
Why does your love
Sir Donald, you had a little experience with flooding in your home a couple of years ago, didn't you?
Yeah, flood is not a good thing at all.
You got a little water in the house.
Yeah.
Is your mic not on? There it is. There you are.
Yeah, and you just kind of never, you just always think about it.
That it may, every time it rains, you think, oh, Jesus,
is
this
going to happen again?
Is this going to be it? Is it going to happen again?
And it's not only the water, but it's kind of like Charles talked about it. It's the dirt, the water, the mud, you know, the dirt is just, afterwards is really the problem. It's just, it's amazing
what a little water can do. And I mean, we didn't have, God, an inch and a half of water in the house. It's all. But I mean, that's enough to mess up the carpets. And
well, it's enough to scare you every time
on the floor.
Well, you know, and he crossed a point. Or touched on a point that here yesterday or day before in Conroe, there's a certain area that floods, and they had a wooden bridge going down into some homes. And, you know, those folks are probably as proud of their homes as I am mine.
I'm sure.
But it's like control flooding, and Charles mentioned that they opened some things on the dam, and they may open. Well, in Conroe, this was deliberate. They needed to open these floods, and when they do that, it floods. But this time, it flooded more than people calculated, and it showed Charles mentioned his freezer, and it showed one man. He said, well, I just hope it doesn't. I hope we don't lose power like we did last time. He said, you know, last time I just barbecued for the neighborhood rather than throw it away. He said, I just cranked up my pit, and he said, I may have to do that again. Yeah. Well, see, that is the problem. You know, nothing would be permanent. So you get all your, if you like to can or prepare your frozen food and you get it all saved up. Even here without flooding, man, we're subject to lose electricity around here for no reason. It can be the bright, sunshiniest day, and electricity just go out.
I couldn't believe that during all that big rain that we had Sunday night, I never lost. But, you know, they were out in Corrigan. They were out down
south. Well, we did not.
Really?
I did out there where we live. We did not lose that. Or satellite TV, if you can believe.
Well, you know, we had this deal with my roof when George, my son, replaced that roof over the den. And we were another 2 months, 3 months, and we would have had the ceiling in the living room would have come down on top of her computer, her desk, on top of our TV, on top of everything. So we got to that just in time. So every time it rains, I think, well, I'm sure the damn roof doesn't leak.
Yeah.
Sure hope he fixed it right. Sure.
Yeah.
Well,
but one good point. I've gotten rid of my last rent house. I no longer have to worry about leaking roofs at rent houses.
Tell me about how that happened.
Well, the lady that was working for it was a client of Lou Ann's, bought it.
Is she in it now? Was she one of your renters?
She was not. I made the renters move.
Oh, the renters had to move?
The renters moved.
And you got actual money.
And we got actual down payment money, and she's paying us. We do not have.
Wow.
So I don't have to worry. All I have to worry about is my house. Now.
But I mean, y'all financed it.
Yeah, she was.
But I bet you in big writing it is, we are not responsible for anything.
I bet it better be.
You had a good lawyer, didn't you?
We had a fine lawyer. We've got a hell of a legal department.
What a deal.
Hey, well, good for you.
It's gone. I'm happy about it. So I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Because you got a rent house and, you know, a tree goes and the guy calls you, well, Mr. Barr, a tree just came through the roof and I got Glenn Shiffy to go over and fix it, remember?
Yep.
That happened 6 or 8 years.
Well, you know,
I
know that you get a dream or you get an idea like Charles up there in New York. Yeah. We've talked to him almost as long as we've done this show.
That's right.
Our first guest.
And but you know, if he were to stick that old for sale sign and some younger people came along and took that off his hands and they'd have the same dream, you might hear the biggest sigh of relief.
Oh,
I know I have gotten into some things, and when they were finally over or I resolved them, and maybe it was just like you laid down and slept really good.
Well, it's like the hot dog stand.
Yeah.
I was unhappy about it at first, and I thought, thank God, because I'd be up there going, you want fries with that?
Yeah.
Washing those dishes, toting that barge. I'm sure glad that fell through.
Building those hot dogs.
I didn't really want to do that. I just thought I did. You know, you get to thinking, you think you want to do things, and you get into them. But you're about through building projects, Mr. Patch. You're not going to.
I'll tell you what. Talking about those three pretty days that we had where I got the slab, actually, I multitasked at the same time. The guys, they didn't need me pouring that slab. They just needed my money. And so my helper guy that I've hired, we were sheetrocking. And so on those beautiful days, I have one more little 9x9 room, 9-foot tall walls, but talking about 16 pieces of sheetrock, give or take. And I just have to find a painter, a texture thing. But the big expense is over. It's all paid for. Except for this god-awful piece of wire I have to buy.
Yeah, no kidding.
Do we have time? Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Quick.
I'm 130 feet away from my power source, and I want to use the they make a wire that you can bury with no conduit. I never can think of the name. But anyway, I need six gauge wire, three, that gives you two hots in a neutral and then a ground.
That's what you really need.
Yeah. And this at Lowe's, and I'm sure it would be competitive at Home Depot. And we have a little electric company here who I just feel is buds with the salesman over there, and he's going to call us back, I hope.
Yeah.
He might come by.
Anyway, this wire costs $3.40 something cents a foot, then plus tax. So I thought I was through with my last big expense, but if I have to buy this wire, say $500 more, then I'm almost going to be through. And maybe that's Leonard.
That probably is.
Listen.
The guy calling.
As a matter of fact, it is.
As a matter of fact, that can we get him on? Can we get him on the air?
Yeah, on the air as we speak.
Listen, Leonard.
Hey, Phil.
We're doing the Blind Handyman. You're on the air.
Oh, great.
Hi, Leonard.
Hey, Leonard.
Hey, how are y'all?
All these guys are talking to you. Just kind of on the radio. We're just about through. Have you got him a price on that wire? Because we were just talking about it.
Yes, the 6.3 with a ground. Romex. Now it's not direct buried, but you could if you needed to.
Yeah.
And it was $1.45 a foot.
Whoa! And will y'all cut it for me, or I have to buy a whole roll?
No, we'll cut it.
What a guy! Well, I'm your guy, and
I ought to get some commission or something for putting him on you.
How about a cold beer?
That'd be good. But come by and have one. We're doing the handyman show. And we're about through, sir.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
I won't make it today, but I'll take a rain check.
Thank you.
All right. So, Leonard, when can I just call you whenever? Or?
Yeah, just let me know when you want to do it.
Man, I appreciate it.
What a guy. Thanks, sir, and I'll talk to you in a minute.
Okay.
All right. Bye. So thousands of people all over the nation will be calling Leonard wanting to buy it.
Well, that's
cheap enough. You're going to bury that Romax and just not tell anybody about it.
That's right.
And I'd run some Cat 5 with it. Well, I put it in conduit, run some. It's cheap enough now you can put conduit, run some Cat 5 with it.
Yeah, I might try to get a better price on conduit. Just for the record, Leonard told me one thing when I said I was going to use PVC. All right. You know, they have different colors for different things. Like if they use PVC in your septic system, but your PVC pipe in that system is purple.
Schedule 40.
It's purple, though, in color. And I said, I asked somebody why, and he said, so they'll know it's septic, and it's sold strictly for that. And Leonard said, well, the only bad thing about you burying it in PVC, he said, if it's white, if somebody comes along years after and buys your house and they're digging, and he said, they do it all the time, they'll look down and say, oh, that's a water line, go ahead and cut it. We'll fix it later.
Yeah.
And he said, then they've got, you know, 120 volts.
That's not your problem.
Yeah,
you'll know where it is. All right, we got to go.
Well, you heartless.
Heartless SOB. All right, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. We'll do it again next Tuesday, I guess.
All right.
See if we can record another one.
Don, yeah. Well, maybe some of us will.
Maybe some of us will. Well, we'll all be here. Maybe we'll all get together someday.
Maybe we will.
Thank you much. I'm Phil Parsi. He said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.